D-Mace, Vin, Gittendonick, 102.5 The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you. Vanderbilt returns to action Saturday morning against LSU, an 11 a.m. kickoff. And I found this to be astounding, gentlemen. According to CBS Sports, this is the first time the Commodores have been favored against LSU since 1948. So it's been a minute. And that, with that said, let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee. Clark, good to catch up with you after your off week. How are you?
I'm doing really well. I'm curious which one of you guys is going to be up at 11 a.m. for the game on Saturday. I hope you guys aren't sleeping in.
Clark, I'm up.
Clark, I have a four-year-old. I am up way before 11 a.m. So I will be very much awake for the game against LSU. But before we get into that matchup, I know that you are close with Brian Callahan. You know that this business is unforgiving. How did you feel when you heard the news on Monday, and have you reached out to Brian over the past couple of days?
Oh, of course I have. I mean, Callie and I maintain contact throughout the year, and look, I mean, personally, obviously I've hurt for him. I'm frustrated for him. I believe in him, and I know him to be a great coach and a great person. And, you know, it's a brutal business that way. And we sign up for it too, guys. So it's not like, I think he'd be the first one to tell you that we're not victimized when those things happen. And he's going to set his jaw, and he's going to be back at it and continue on his career, and this will be a learning experience. But obviously I hurt for him and his family, and looking forward to seeing him soon, and we've been in touch, and you know, he would do the same for me. So tough deal, and winning is so hard at these levels. It takes a total alignment. It takes everyone on the same page, and sometimes coaches get too much credit, and sometimes coaches bear the brunt of the blame, and that is part of it. But it was a tough week that way.
Looking back quickly at the loss at Alabama, the red zone turnovers your team had against the Crimson Tide were a major turning point in that game. I know that your program had the fewest turnovers in the country last season, just 7 turnovers. By my math, you're up to 6 so far this season. What have you emphasized with your team this week leading into the LSU game to make sure that you are taking better care of the ball?
Well, I've told them that we only have one left to create. You know, we can't go beyond what we did a year ago. And so that's it. No, I'm just kidding. I want there to be an attitude of aggression. I want there to be a playing free and playing loose. That's when we're at our best. I want to be able to let Diego Pavia play to his personality. And yet we know a part of our formula is maintaining possession of the ball. And when we've done that, obviously we've been really efficient in how we've finished drives. We've finished drives scoring points and a lot of times scoring touchdowns this year. So, you know, 2 critical mistakes in the Alabama game. It's hard to win against good teams on the road when you make those self-inflicted wounds. So we've emphasized how important it is to take care of the ball. And I think there's the point at which where you don't linger too long on the pass game. It's hard with a bye week because it's the last kind of taste in your mouth. But hey, how do we learn from it? Turn the page, move forward, and then just focus on being better for LSU. But certainly that's something that we've talked about, we've addressed. We want to make good decisions with the ball and protect the ball when we're running it. I expect us to be better, and yet we won't be perfect. And we have to be able to account for that in the way we play in all 3 phases to make sure that we're strong as a team.
We'll talk with Clark Lee, Vanderbilt's head football coach. Now, Coach, if you're watching that game, and I know you probably look look at it totally different. You're watching that game, and as a spectator or a former player, I'm watching it and I'm saying, man, outside of those two mishaps, I'm not sure if we saw the better team win the game. And with that said, how is it a good thing to have a loss like that to, and then go into a bad week, or is it, do you want to play the very next week? Because you did talk about, you know, having that loss, having that taste in your mouth, and then having to go the whole week and 2 weeks to even get a chance to get it out of your mouth.
But typically, I think it's good to get back on the field. Mm-hmm. For us, you know, that was six straight weeks coming out of training camp where we had played. So we were due a bye week, and I think the team appreciated the mental reset. So it came at the right time for us. You know, we moved past that game. We're you know, this is a resilient group. It's a mature group. It's not a group that we got to sit there and beat over the head with, you know, every single mistake that was made, or, you know, we communicate pretty clearly and directly the things we want to improve upon. We did that. We got back on the practice field. We were able to have some fun out there and enjoy competing. We got a couple days off, which allowed our players to get home, which was really, I think, beneficial to them. And then Sunday we got back to work on LSU. We really had a spirited practice to start our week off. So typically it's good to get back out on the field and have another game to focus on. In this case, the bye week came at the right time for us just to get us a mental reset. And I've been pleased with how the team's come out and focused and prepped this week to this point.
Now, Coach, you don't have many teams that are able to hold opponents under 11 points or less, and you're walking into a situation where, or they're walking, coming here, to where the LSU defense don't allow that many points. In an era where offenses are scoring 30, close to 40 points in a game, what is it that LSU, or have they done to make it difficult for teams to score?
Well, they force you to operate at a high level. I think the first thing is they're so disruptive in their front seven that, you know, they get you off schedule. You know, the way they pressure, it's both what they're doing schematically and who they're doing with that is particularly challenging. So you have to communicate to try to pick up those pressures, try to cover them up in the run game. Obviously, try to create space in the pocket in the pass game. You know, they're multiple in how they play zone, man, bracket. They kind of do it all. And, you know, the space that you feel like is open on a given snap, when you find it, it closes really rapidly. So it's not a group that gives up a ton of explosive plays. It's a group that forces you to play methodically and really forces you to execute and also play with patience. And that's going to be the key to the game on Saturday is, first of all, not losing patience when we absorb some TFLs or absorb some negative yardage plays. You know, being content, taking the space that's given to us and trying to, you know, really march the ball down the field methodically and hopefully, you know, force them into making mistakes. And then the last thing is, I mean, they've been really opportunistic with turnovers. Theirs look different than ours. I mean, we've forced and recovered a bunch of fumbles. They've intercepted the ball a lot, and that has to do with the pressure they create in their pass rush and their blitz game, and quarterbacks kind of panicking and throwing the ball up into coverage down the field. So, you know, they're going to force us to play a clean game. They're really, really skilled on defense, and you know, it'll be a challenge, but it's also something that, you know, we look forward to. That's why you want to play in the SEC, is to face these great defenses. And, you know, we'll have our plan and we'll need to execute our plan on Saturday.
Talking with Clark Lee, head football coach at Vanderbilt. They've got the big game against LSU coming up Saturday at 11. And Clark, unfortunately, I will be in Winnipeg. Canada is not the best place to watch a lot of college football games. You kind of get what you get, but I will find a way. I'm going to find some way to watch you guys while the morning skate's going on. I want to ask you about how Diego Pavia has handled himself since the Alabama loss. I thought it was great how he handled himself in the press conference. You know, he was mature. He took responsibility, et cetera. You know, there's so much spotlight on him. You got Johnny Manziel down there. What have you seen from him since that loss? Because I know, if we know anything about him, he's determined and he's going to want to bounce back.
Well, he plays with a lot on the line. You know, that's kind of what makes him special, is when he's out there. I mean, it's personal to him. He is an ultimate competitor, and You know, but the thing that's always been true about Diego is he understands the responsibility he has as a leader. He wants the burden of responsibility in terms of putting the game on his shoulders and making the plays he needs to make. And he's always been great about taking responsibility that way. So no surprises that he was able to see it clearly after the game and took ownership. And he's been great. I mean, right back to work and excited about prep and speaking confidence into the team and, you know, all the things that we expect from him. He just, the game's never too big for him. The moment's never too big for him. He takes it all in stride. And, you know, there's a lot, I think, that is created around him with respect to swagger. I've always said this, the things that...
Clark's phone is breaking up. We will reconnect with Clark Lee here in just a moment. But Willie, let's expand on what you were asking Clark there as we look to get him back on the phone.
Well, I think I was impressed in that press conference because he was disappointed, you could tell, in the way he played. He has a high standard for himself. We talked about the atmosphere there, having beaten Alabama the year before, how they were going to try to get after him. But that's why I think I was curious, and I'm not surprised at Coach Lee's answer on that as well. And so now he's had like Derek was asking, there's been extra time, you know, to go back to the drawing board where you're trying to rest, you're trying to recover, and at the same time you've got that burning determination to get back out there as fast as possible, and you got to wait an extra week. Plus, you're playing a really, really tough defense in LSU. What a great challenge going forward for him in particular against that LSU defense.
We welcome back Clark Lee. Clark, sorry about that. Please continue.
No, I don't know if it was something here or something in Winnipeg. I just you know, I there was some kind of crash across the way there with the construction, so maybe that disrupted the signal. But no, hey, long and short, his process, his connections, the quiet humility, the curiosity, that's what makes him unique, and that's what allows him to take responsibility in those moments where he plays with a lot on the line, but he understands that he's not entitled to results. And I got a ton of respect for him, so that's all.
I wanted to ask you one more about the makeup of your roster. There was a chart that circulated around about the uniqueness of your roster. You have a lot of graduate transfers, and you've got a lot of older players on the roster. And I can see that working to a team's advantage, but I think over the years you could see it work to your disadvantage if you've got guys that are just sort of playing out the string, getting a degree. You don't have them very long to develop them. What's the key in your mind to identifying the right kind of guys who you know you're not going to have for 4 or 5 years, but they can come in with the right mindset to blend and help your team?
Well, when they bring snap experience, that's a plus. And again, fortunately, this isn't like dealing with like veteran, you know, professionals where they're 35 or 36 and slowing down. These guys are, you know, 22, 23, and they're actually kind of in some ways hitting their prime. Snap experience is huge. The game moves slower for the guys that have played. You know, we have to be really good at teaching and training our systems to get them kind of hardwired into the player so that he can play to his instincts and not thinking on the field. But this is a really demanding environment we have. Football has to be important. You know, we ask these guys to commit a lot to the process, and that pretty much kind of filters the ones that we want to be in the program. That it has to be a football first decision. Obviously we have a great university and great graduate programs and all that stuff, but this needs to be about, you know, playing good football, about helping us win. And we're not going to allow someone to come here and circumvent the process or shortchange the process. There's a lot put on these guys with respect to time commitment, and it goes beyond the meetings and the training. And this is about how you live, how you fuel yourself, how you recover, how you sleep, all those things come into play. And so far we've found that balance where we're able to have an old team, which is great, and yet still have a team that's fighting for results on Saturdays.
Was that something philosophically you and your staff thought might work when you were evaluating everything? Because I like, for example, Tim Corbin, I know before the days of NIL and the transfer portal, he loved that developmental process of taking the high school athlete, having him for 3 or 4 years, et cetera. But it's evolved now, right? So how was that? How did that come? Why do you think you guys have so many older players?
Well, some of it is, and I know the COVID year guys are kind of weaning out of the system, but some of it is just you had a bunch of older players that had graduated from where they started that were looking for opportunities. And so there was just kind of this swell of that population of older, experienced players in the transfer portal. That's a part of it. You know, I think also the year-round commitment that these guys put in. I mean, we are basically with them. We have them 3 weeks in May. They're off, and then there are a couple of discretionary weeks otherwise. But I mean, this has really become kind of year-round immersion, and it allows us to build with these kind of these guys that are from outside the program. Where it used to be, it took 3 or 4 years to really get the system down. Now we've sped that up just because of the amount of time we spend together. And you know, for us, I think at Vanderbilt, we've always wanted to have an older team. You know, this has always been kind of the goal, would be like, hey, you know, can we play teams that are playing, you know, freshman, sophomore players and third year players that are going to be leaving the our competitors, that can we fill the team with fourth and fifth year players? The vision was always that would come from within. And obviously that's been true in some cases, but you know, what we do when we go to the portal is we just address the needs of the roster. And we want to do that in ways in the portal that actually addresses the top end of our depth chart, not the foundation of our depth chart. So where we'll still have developmental players come in the system as high schoolers, our patience with development has changed a little bit, Willie. It's, you know, we say, hey, we want to see the potential for a player to get on the field within 2 years of him being here, because if it goes beyond that, there's actually a better answer to that need that exists in the portal than in high school recruiting. You just don't, it actually is a negative to wait longer than that. So a lot's changed in that time. There's still a blend here, but certainly when we go in the portal, we're looking to address top end of the depth chart, and that means snap experience is a premium, and we've been able to bring those guys in, kind of immerse them in our systems and get them ready to play. And that's been the formula that's worked for us the last couple of years.
Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick. Clark, thank you so much for your time. Good luck this weekend against LSU.
Thanks, guys. Great to be with y'all.
You as well. Clark Lee on the program, 615-737-1025. Vanderbilt favored by 2.5 over LSU, according to CBS. This is the first time the Commodores have been favored against LSU since 1948, and the first time they have been favored against a ranked opponent since at least 1978. Vanderbilt has played an astounding 176 consecutive games against ranked opponents as an underdog. We'll see if the Commodores can bounce back from the loss at Alabama at home on Saturday morning, an 11 o'clock kickoff against LSU. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we get back into the Titans. We have yet another Now They Tell Us story. And there was one section of this story that when I read it, my initial reaction was, ugh. We'll get to that next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, 1025 The Game.